Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donahue. My guest on the show today is Wayne Barton. Wayne has written several books about Man United, charting the team's evolution from the Busby era up to modern times. His most recent book is about George Best, considered the greatest footballer ever to play for the club. The book is entitled True Genius, and I'm delighted to say that Wayne is joining me on the line. Wayne, thanks so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Wayne, I might start. I mentioned at the start you've written several books, really, really great books about the history of Man United up to the modern day, books about Eric Cantona, David Beckham. But what motivated you at this stage to write a book about George Best?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a United fan. So I consider myself very fortunate to be able to write books about United and to, you know, obviously to have them published as well. So as someone who is a United fan, and you know, I'm quite avaricious with the club's history, it was always one of those things where, you know, because I support the club, obviously at some point, you know, I would have loved to have written something about George Best. And whenever I would conduct interviews for other books that I'd written, if I talked to anyone who shared any time with George, I would normally talk to them about him, and you know, they'd be included in my interviews. And so I had this sort of storage of documents of interviews I'd done about George anyway, and the idea was one day I would revisit that and write a book. But I always felt, because of the number of books that have been written about George, it was always a case of when will I feel ready to do that, you know, that I'm not going to write another book that's just something that can be thrown away, something that does some justice to his reputation and doesn't cover old ground, you know, that's already been covered before. And obviously, as well, as a fan and as someone who writes about the club, when will I be ready to do that? You know, when will I feel that, you know, I can take on a subject like that? There's one of my friends who actually suggested to me, said, oh, I think the time is right, you've got the right contact network, you've talked to the right people before, and you've already got some interesting stories. I think you should write a book on George. So when I thought about what I could add to it, it was more a case of, well, yeah, again, look at that, what hasn't been done. And the funny thing was, I kept coming back to it. The thing that hadn't been done was a book just about his football. So that's what I concentrated on, really. And I had some stories, obviously, talking to youth team colleagues at United, and also had this story of his exit from United, which I knew hadn't been revealed anywhere before. So once I had that sort of the framework there, and I was convinced to do it by one of my friends, I thought, no, do you know what, I'll just go in for it fully. And yeah, it was a daunting thing, don't get me wrong, you know, am I ready to write a book about George Best? And you know, I waited for the sort of feedback on that. I'm still not sure, because it's such a big subject, but thankfully everyone seems to be kind about it so far.
And you mentioned there, Wayne, about his early years, and that's one thing when reading the book, I kind of, it got me in thinking about his position going over. Like, he was a lad from Belfast, and he went over to England as a very, very young lad. And I think the first time he kind of was really, really homesick, which is totally understandable. And he went over a second time and kind of persevered. And it really struck me reading that. It says an awful lot about his mental strength. That's a thing that is often, because sometimes you're right about so much when we talk about George Best, a lot of people will talk about his off-field problems. But in order for him to achieve and even make it to Man United and persevere coming over from Belfast, he really, really had to be strong mentally. And that was a real characteristic that really defined George Best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're completely right with that. One thing I would say as well, in addition, you mentioned the sort of inner strength. I think that was something that surprised himself even. You know, so when he first arrived, he thought, that, you know, he felt out of place. He felt, I think his words were, I looked like a raggle-taggle scrubber. Those were his words, because he felt so out of place. But I think once he went back and once he realised that he had the talent to fit in, and that, you know, he could do things that other players couldn't, and that he could not only fit in with the players around him, he obviously looks better than them as well in training. And then he could do the same kind of things to professionals. I mean, everyone knows the story of how he embarrassed the great Harry Gregg in training. Those kind of things, they helped him realise, you know, I can actually do something here. And the confidence that came from that, I think, went hand in hand with giving him, you know, that inner strength. It just developed him in that kind of regard. I mean, don't get me wrong, he was still a slight lad, but you had to have that kind of inner belief what he started to develop. But it all came from that, I think, basically realising that he was as good or better than the people who were there at the club with him.
He was well able to look after himself on the pitch. You talk about his encounters with Chopper Harris. Even Chopper Harris, the name, I just love it. But he was well able to handle himself because football, it was a tough game back then. A lot of tackles that would have happened back then, it would straight red card. But George was well able to look after himself on the pitch.
Yeah, and I think that's something that developed as the years went on. I always felt, I think it's not just my feeling. I think you can track that to anyone who watched George play and the tapes of him playing, even if you, like me, you weren't lucky enough to be born in that period. You look back at that time, his progression, he seemed ahead of his time anyway. And every time the rules caught up with him, so you would have this period where the tackling from behind was outlawed. Obviously, there's a famous example of the Chop Harris, which you mentioned there. What made George so good at that time was that he sort of realised, well, these tackles are going to keep coming in. I need to develop myself. I need to be quicker than the foul, which is the way that I think Alex Stepney said it. He actually taught himself to be so fast that he was quicker than the late tackle of an opponent, quicker than the foul of an opponent. And then this following season, the rules changed to outlaw tackles like that, to stop them from happening. And then George's form was incredible. That was the period where, I mean, everyone looks at those goals where he scored the hat-trick against Bobby Moore, where he scored the goal where he took on the entire Sheffield United defence. All those goals were happening in that period because the rules had changed, unfortunately, at that point, obviously. His illness had started to take hold and the problems at United were bigger than bigger than George could handle, but it was just an insight into how far ahead he was of everyone around him, basically. And it's a shame because that was the kind of thing that I would have loved to have seen more of, to see how the game would have changed with George, you know, pioneering this kind of talent which he had. Because I mean, the form that he had in the early weeks of the Franco Farrell era, that was as good as he ever played for United.
He is really unfortunate, and you charted brilliantly in the book. He is really unfortunate that 68 seemed to be the pinnacle. He was younger than a lot of the players, and a lot of players subsequently were coming near to the end of the career. So that really, really did not help him in the latter part of his Man United career.
No, you're right with that. It was a difficult time. Franco Farrell came in. I mean, his first few weeks in the job before he even saw George play, he was dealing with questions about George appearing on Parkinson, and he couldn't understand the level of celebrity that George was dealing with. But also at the time, football was a much more patient game back in those days, and Frank came in and he thought this Manchester United team, which were winning every week because George was flying every week, he thought that they were better than they were, and he didn't bring in the signings as soon as he should have done, really. He didn't anticipate the danger. He let the rot set in a little bit too deep. So by the time he brought in players who were certainly good enough to play for United, like Martin Buchan, who became one of the greatest captains the club ever had, and Ian Story Moore, who was a great winger who would have taken the pressure off George, it was too late because the problems in the side were so deep. Frank had already started to retreat away from the public vision of being Manchester United manager. And George was caught in this limbo again where, you know, just like Wilf McGuinness before Frank, he was basically like a pariah who was being flogged every week on the pitch. And, you know, you would eventually come to the conclusion that you don't need that in your life. And obviously then the illness was taking hold of him at the same time. And it just accelerated this tragic conclusion, basically. And it was United's loss, as great as it was George's.
Mm. And I might turn back, because I don't want to dwell too much on the kind of latter years, which are sad in a lot of respects. I might turn back to you document it brilliantly in the book, the game against Benfica in 66, where away Stadium of Light, intimidating place, and he's only 19. Was that the match? You describe it brilliantly in the book, the performance. Was that the match where he really established himself and people kind of sat up and realised this was a real special talent?
On the worldwide stage, it absolutely was. A couple of years earlier, he'd played a similar game against Chelsea domestically, which had sort of made everyone sit up and realise, hang on, do you know what, this 18, 17-year-old kid who's just come on the scene, he's actually the real deal, and he's probably the best player in the league already. And that was the theme that I was getting from the interviews that I conducted with George's teammates were, no, he was the best player in the country, and he was the best player in the world. But of course, when you give someone that kind of proclamation, you also have to have the achievement to match it. You have to have the standard. You have to have this occasion. And there was no bigger occasion than playing a team on their own backyard, which had never been beaten in their own backyard, and they're the reigning World Player of the Year in Eusebio. And it was kind of like, Antonio Simões, who played for Benfica on that night, he actually said George was a prince, and on that night he became a king. So it was like, as Eusebio was being awarded the European Player of the Year, George was almost stealing it off him. Mm. He was absolutely incredible that night. You mentioned how it went down in history. There was a great moment. Everyone seen that breathtaking second goal, but it's the way in which he had the flexibility to dodge two tackles and still have the composure to score the goal at the end of it. It really was breathtaking, and no other player in world football could do something at that speed with that level of imagination. And it was a landmark night because he had the bravery to do that. He went on that stage and he said, no, this is mine, I'm going to do that. And you hadn't really seen that from a teenager before, apart from obviously Pelé in the World Cup, but on the club level in Europe you'd never seen anything like it. And that was the night for me at least. I felt George was worthy of his teammates' accolades, being the best player in the world at that moment.
And I have to say, reading the book, it's perfect to have YouTube or something up as you're kind of describing things, because I suspect a lot of kind of younger Man United fans they would have heard of George Best, but they mightn't have seen a lot of the footage. So it's well worth checking out some of the footage of the games. They're all available there on YouTube. I might turn Wayne. The thing I really liked about the book was it covered ground that I never really thought of before. So I might ask you about his international career, because he's always considered, when people mention great players, the greatest players never to play at the World Cup, George Best is always mentioned, but he did come close on a couple of occasions, I'm right in saying that. And within Northern Ireland, his form at Northern Ireland was quite good. I was looking at some of the stats, 37 games for Northern Ireland, 9 goals. So he looked he seemed like he really loved playing for Northern Ireland, and there were some special days while he was performing from Northern Ireland as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a fantastic player for his country. He loved playing for his country. Sometimes he would encourage the talk of a unified Ireland for an easier chance of playing at the tournaments. He was all for things like that. But this is a measure of how good he was. I mean, he had 2 or 3 games for his national side named after him. Mm. Everyone remembers the game we played at Belfast with against a great Scotland side, where he came up against Tommy Gemmell, and then Eddie McCready, I think it was, at Chelsea, who played against him at club level and was tormented against by George on several occasions. And George went at Tommy Gemmell so many times in this game that at half time Gemmell asked to swap with MacReady, and MacReady said, no chance, am I going to swap with you? But then on that occasion, George probably went and found MacReady and took him on anyway. He went past every single player on the pitch that day. I think even all his own 11 teammates and the people in the stand. He was absolutely unbelievable. And that's one of those games that you can find the footage of easily. And it, the footage does justice, really, because a lot of those things you think, oh, could a player operate in today's world? And you can see a player who can very easily operate in today's world, the way that he's flying around. There are a couple of other games, obviously, that he played for Northern Ireland. Like you said, he wasn't lucky enough to get to a major tournament with them. But everyone remembers, surely, the game that he played against Holland, where he sort of sought out Johan Cruyff after an almost decade-long rivalry of who was the best player in the world, and he went after Cruyff and nutmegged him in the first few minutes of the game, and then turned to Jester to the press box because he'd been telling the journalists on the bus before the game that that's exactly what he was going to do. There's also a great game we played against the USSR at Windsor Park, where one of the coaches told one of the defenders, there's a game going on today, but that is none of your concern. Your job is to follow George Best around. And what followed, and I described it in the book as you could basically stick on O Fortuna and just watch George in slow motion take this guy to the cleaners. And the game finished 0-0, but if you want to watch beautiful football, you watch George taking that guy all over the pitch. Denver did get that opportunity to play on the international tournament stage. But the closest he ever came, ironically, was when they were calling for him to be included into the 1982 World Cup. But by then, it was just an idea that George would be a token place in the squad, and nobody wanted to see that version of George playing the World Cup or, you know, European Championships. Nobody wanted to see that. So while it was a shame that he didn't, in a way, it's probably better that we didn't, because nobody would have wanted that memory of him on the world stage, I don't think, anyway.
And I found that very interesting regarding the United Ireland team. Even though George was from, I suppose, a unionist background, he just didn't have a sectarian bone in his body. And it's really, really, really heartening that he had that idea of a United Ireland team.
Yeah, and it means also like that with, I think it was the idea that anything, a platform what he could have to demonstrate how good he was to the world, he was all for that, and the Unified Ireland would have given him that. It would have also made the Irish contingent stronger as well, because they would have been able to pull from two areas of talent. But he was also, he was championing the idea of, well, what today was being argued as the Super League. He was talking about that in the mid-60s, you know, the chance to play against the likes of Real Madrid and AC Milan on a yearly basis, which effectively was the genesis for the Champions League and not the Super League. So he was ahead of his time in wanting to sort of compete against the best players. And again, that shows his bravery, doesn't it, in a certain way, because what he said is this little kid who was 5'9" and weighed nothing wanted to test himself against the very best because he thought he was the best. And, you know, in my opinion, he was right.
Before I let you go, Wayne, I might ask you, I was lucky enough to pick up one of your other books over the last few weeks about Jimmy Murphy, and I was reading an article recently that there's plans to put a statue to Jimmy Murphy at Old Trafford. Jimmy Murphy, for people that don't know, was Man United's assistant manager during the Busby era. So just, I suppose, what would be your reaction to that move? You wrote a really, really excellent book, a real great insight to Jimmy Murphy. Would you think that having a statue at Old Trafford, that'd be a fitting tribute to Jimmy Murphy?
Yeah, well, there's no tribute big enough. Yeah, but Jimmy Murphy, I'll say it simply as that. So a statue is long overdue and very welcome. The club have obviously, it is overdue, so you could criticise the club for that, but the club have been in dialogue, they've accepted it, they've championed it themselves, and they've been happy to do that. So that's one thing you've got to congratulate the club on in a time when they do get a lot of criticism. As far as Jimmy's concerned, again, you know, I think the best way I can put it simply is that, in my opinion, he's the most important man in Manchester United history. Obviously, Busby built this great side, but any deeper analysis of what that Busby side represented would surely conclude with the fact that Jimmy Murphy's personality shone through all of it, and his work as well, but certainly his personality because of the way that the team played. And then, obviously, there was the disaster, and Jimmy sort of kept the club going after that. But the most important thing, aside from that, was the fact that he did it true to the ideals which he and Busby had worked on before the crash. You know, this genesis, this nucleus of youth players, and not filling the team with players from outside. They kept doing that, and there was this fighting spirit that got the club to the cup final in 1958. And that, I mean, they had the Phoenix on the shirt as a new sort of crest after, you know, for the cup final, which sort of represented the rebirth of the club. And that, I mean, again, I talked to Sir Alex Ferguson for the book, and he said that telling the young players of today what Jimmy did is the most important thing you can do for any young player playing for the club, and that speaks volumes, really. So, yeah, a statue is so welcome. It will be great that there's going to be something there, something visible, something prominent that will encourage education for the future generations, really, to know what Jimmy was, who Jimmy was and what he did.
Yeah, and it's great. And the book, I must admit, Wayne, I didn't know much about Jimmy Murphy, and really strongly recommend the Jimmy Murphy book as well. And I didn't realise, I suppose I should have, that he had an Irish background. I think it was Kilkenny. So along with George Best, there's an Irish connection. Before you let you go, I'd be right in saying there's a film on BT. I think it's been aired a few times. It's aired airing on Friday as well to accompany the book.
Yep, it is airing on Friday. True genius. We reached out to Callum to narrate it and present it. So we got to do a little bit of filming at the Cliff and at Wembley. And obviously, you know, Callum's had a really troubled relationship with his dad, so it was great to sort of go back so he could connect on a more emotional, positive level, and I could see how much it affected Callum. The archive footage which the team at BT have got is just absolutely incredible. And you know, the director Tom Boswell did a great job with it. It's a purely celebratory film about George charting his early years, going into winning the European Player of the Year award. And yeah, it's on again on Friday, but there are always repeated screenings of it at the moment. There'll be a lot in the new season, and it's available on the app as well for BT, I think.
Well, it's the perfect accompaniment to the book. And you're a really busy man. It's great to talk to you, Wayne, because I know you're busy writing away, and you've a couple of really exciting projects coming up. I'll be writing saying you've a book planned about the people will remember the Silva twins that's coming out in the next couple of months, and you've also a book about Duncan Edwards, is that correct, coming out shortly?
Yeah. So the book with the Silva twins, Raphael and Fabio, is out in 3 or 4 weeks. It's out early August, and that'll be available everywhere. You can get worldwide delivery on that, if you just look hard enough, it's there on socials. The twins are promoting that all the time. And yeah, and obviously from writing a book on Jimmy Murphy and having that was authorised by his family, and then writing this book on George, it naturally led to this book with Duncan Edwards, which his family has, they basically asked me to write it. The Duncan Edwards Foundation, who are the official sort of representatives for everything Duncan, basically, have authorised the book. They've really got behind it, really supported it. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about Duncan Edwards here, there's no bigger honour. It's such a sensitive subject to sort of tackle, and after Jimmy Murphy and George Best and Duncan Edwards, they're the sort of three most mythical figures in Manchester United history, so I'm very honoured. I can feel the responsibility, but I'm really enjoying working on it, and there are so many new things that are basically, they're astounding me as a supporter reading it, you know, learning it. So as I'm putting it onto the page, I'm just astounded by the things that I'm learning as I'm writing it. So I hope that when it is out there for people to read, they will, you know, they'll enjoy it for that. It's just an incredible story, Duncan Edwards. Yeah, what is it? Just a legendary figure, and befitting of that description. It almost feels like if you try and describe him, you're automatically not doing him justice, you know what I mean? Yeah. If somebody just start putting words to the legend.
Yeah, well, we're greatly looking forward to that. Listen, Wayne, your current book, A True Genius, The Games, The Goals, The Glory, The Complete Story, it's available now wherever you get your books, Amazon, all the bookstores. Listen, Wayne, it's been really, really great to chat to you. And any of other of Wayne's books, you can give, you're on Twitter, Wayne, so people want to check out your, for any Man United fans, they can find you there to kind of follow, to get a sense of your back catalogue and if they're interested in any of your previous books.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social medias. Wayne S. Bolton is the username that I've got on there. Thank you.
That's great. Listen, Wayne, it's really great to talk to you. Thanks a million for your time. We've kept you longer than we planned to, but it's been great to talk to you. Thanks a million. Congratulations on the George Best book, and thanks again for joining us this evening.
Thank you.